This episode is sponsored by Linode. Do you need a Linux server for your latest creation? Then check them out. They provide native SSD storage, 200 gigabit per second network connections, Intel E5 processors, and top-of-the-line hardware to run your servers on. It deploys Linux in seconds from a Linode cloud, and you can choose your Linux distribution and node location right from the manager. They have locations in Asia, North America, and Europe, and a sweet set of tools to make it easy to manage it. If the web interface isn't your thing, they also have an API and a command line. They also provide two-factor authentication, IPv6, DNS manager, plumbing, scaling, and everything else you would want. So get the most out of your Linux node by checking them out at linode.com or devchat.tv/linode. Hello and welcome to React Native Radio, episode 89. I'm your host, Nader Davit. Today on our panel, we have just me, but as our special guest, we actually have four different people that are going to be joining us, and they're all coming from a couple of different things. The general topic is going to be really around the full stack React Native book, along with the newsletter and just the people that are involved with that and kind of what they're doing in the React Native community. You've probably heard or seen or followed most of them on Twitter already, if you're kind of already in the React Native community. If not, hopefully during this episode, you'll kind of learn about them and kind of come away with something new that you've learned. So before we go any further, let me go ahead and introduce everyone here to the show. So we have Devin Abbott. Devin, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nader.
Sophia Shoemaker.
Hi.
Hussein Jerda.
Hi, everybody.
And Anthony Akamazu.
Hello.
So I appreciate all four of you coming on. It's rare that we have this many guests, so this is really amazing. So I guess we'll break this up into, again, like a few different things that we're going to be talking about. But really, the main thing we want to get into at first, I guess, is the book. So can you give us kind of like a quick overview of how the book came about and a little bit about the company behind the book? Because I know that whoever started the full stack, I guess, like branding or label or company has a lot of other stuff going on. So kind of just talk about how the book became a thing and like who was involved in it and how you all know each other.
Who wants to take that?
I guess I'll start. I'm not even sure how Devin did. I can't even remember at this point. Did Nate? So Nate is one of the co-founders of FullStack.io, along with Ari Lerner. And they initially wrote a book called NG Book. And then they also wrote NG Book 2. Wrote a React book as well. But I'm not sure how I know Devin, you and I we got connected at a couple of meetups, but did Nate reach out to you about doing this book?
Yeah.
Or exactly how it all got started.
So about, I don't know, a year and a half ago, I made this open source website, React Native Express, which is sort of a reference guide for learning different topics in React Native. When I launched it, Nate reached out and he asked about potentially doing a book. At the time, I was busy with a lot of stuff, so it didn't happen right away. But I got back to him about 6 months later and said I was really interested. It sounds like Hussein was sort of already on board. Hussein, how did you end up getting involved?
So Nate reached out to me about, I think, a year and a half ago as well. But we first worked on Modern NG1, which is a book about using Angular 1.5, 1.6, which is newer patterns. So after that was done, I sort of just asked Nate and told him I was sort of getting into React Native. And I just thought it'd be a good idea to start working in React Native book. And he was like, oh, yeah, me and Devin are already talking about it. And he just sort of looked me in.
Nice.
Yeah, we all just got connected. And I think it's been a great process, personally. I mean, Hussein and Devin just like, they just work so hard. This is not their full-time job. You know, they have full-time jobs right now. So, you know, on weekends and just any free time they had, they've been working on this book. And Anthony has just been awesome about making sure edits happen and getting things released. And just this whole team has just been really super awesome. Really awesome to work with. My role has been a little more minimal. I just kind of make sure that things are moving along and, you know, just checking in, getting updates, making sure that, you know, the book is getting written. But the whole team, I think, is just a really awesome team.
So I guess I'd like to hear, so I want to definitely talk about the book and kind of hear about how the process of writing with multiple authors and kind of how this process goes, because I know different publishers have different things. This sounds like it's a little like less structured than a typical publisher, but it's not as unstructured as like a self-published book, maybe like something in between. But I guess I'd like to also hear about the company fullstack.io. And I was big into Angular before I got into React, and I totally remember the NG book. In fact, it was like a really huge thing when it came out. I remember seeing, not only was it a big book, it was hugely popular. But I'm interested in hearing how that company kind of like came about and what the guys and girls that are like involved with starting that are doing and how they kind of now moved into React and what other spaces they may be in.
Yeah, you know, I don't know much about, maybe Anthony can chime in. I don't know much about the history. I just know that Ari and Nate, they got connected. I don't know exactly their history. I just know that they've written the two books and just saw that React was getting really popular and, you know, they really know how to write really good books. And so, and it's not just about writing the book. It's also marketing the book and, you know, everything that's involved, like with the book, it's not just the actual text that's in the book. They're just really good at all of that. And so they just saw an opportunity to write a really comprehensive book about React and, you know, reached out to different authors and had them write that book as well. I don't know, maybe Anthony, you can chime in on any other aspect of the background behind the company.
Anthony, did you work with Nate at If This Then That?
I did. So Nate and I were buddies, old colleagues from If This Then That, IFTTTT. And Nate approached me about 2.5 years ago, I want to say. We just kind of started to have a conversation around doing a book on web components, Polymer, actually. And the discussion eventually evolved into React, which was still kind of a rising star at the time. And thankfully, we decided to jump ship to that instead. And that process was also very collaborative with, you know, me contributing the majority of the chapters, but us involving other people in the community to contribute chapters in areas that they were specializing in. So this book's a little different in that for the React Native book, you know, we have Devin and Hussein as our primary authors with Sophia and I providing support. And it's worked out really well. And I think it also helps us keep sort of a cohesive style and language throughout the chapters when we're managing a few less bodies that are writing the actual content.
I think one aspect about these books is two things. One, we don't make too many assumptions about what the person already knows. So we try to really treat each reader as a really, really beginner person, not, you know, and then if they are more advanced, they can skip stuff. Right. And then the other thing is, that's really big is just kind of taking the reader on a journey and not giving too much a huge block of text at once. You know, we give them a little paragraph explaining some concept and then some code and then another paragraph that explains a specific concept and then more code. So they really feel like they are diving into writing code rather than just reading, you know, a bunch of theory or whatever. Just I think as a reader or as somebody who's trying to learn a new language or technology, it really helps to have to be more hands-on rather than reading forever. So right. I think that their approach on that is really, really helpful, and I think that is what has made their books really successful, is just making sure that beginners are not left in the dust and not understanding some parts of the, you know, some concepts.
Yeah, and it seems like every chapter is like building something. So you're not just kind of like learning and just writing APIs. You're actually seeing a completed product, which is really cool.
Yeah, and I think the other aspect about these projects is it's not just, it's not as, I mean, they're simple enough that you can get it done in a chapter, but it's more than just a to-do list or, you know, just one screen. It is, it's a little more complex than, you know, a starter kind of project, which I think is also really helpful because then it makes the reader feel like they have really completed something or accomplished something and they really can understand what they're building.
So how has it been, Devin and Hussein, to kind of work with two people on a single book? And I'm kind of curious how the process has been as far as keeping up to date with the React Native APIs.
Well, working with Hussein has been a lot of fun. I think we get along pretty well. I make a lot of jokes at Hussein's expense, but he's a pretty nice guy. So it's been
Hussein,
okay so
it should
far.
Be noted, is the only Canadian on the team.
Yep.
And one's enough. So working with Hussein's been great. We tend to switch back and forth. Like, I'll write one chapter, he'll write the next, I'll write the next, I'll write the next. Yeah, Hussein, what do you think?
Yeah, so when I wrote Modern NG1, it was pretty much just myself. And I had Nate sort of go over my chapters and sort of review them and let me know how, whether I should improve things and change things. And I think this was completely different because not only do I have Devin sort of helping me in every chapter, I also have Sophia's input and Anthony's input. And I think it makes such a huge difference because there's so many things that I feel like I learn as I write along. And yeah, I think we all get along really well. So that works too.
Anthony acts as our tiebreaker. So whenever Hussein and I can't decide which pattern we want to teach, we'll present both to Anthony and he'll make the final call.
It is a vital position and I am happy to take it.
So like, is this going to be like a digital only book or is this going to be something that's going to be published in paper form?
Definitely in paper form. The React book is in paper form too. So we're planning to do it in paper form, but not until it's all complete.
Okay. So, I guess what is the target like publish date and can, I guess, where can people go ahead and start buying it? Cause it looks like about 60% of it's done or more. They can go ahead, I'm sure, and just buy it and start reading it. I know I bought it, but I guess just kind of tell the listeners the best place to kind of do that.
So we don't have a like hard date. Maybe Hussein and Devin could probably give you a better idea of when things will be finished. But listeners can go to fullstackreact.com/react-native to buy the book. And when the paperback version comes out, they can go to that same URL and purchase the paperback version.
We've been planning to write one chapter per month. And with the remaining number of chapters we have left, that would end up being about 3 or 4 months. Although the chapter that's going to come out tomorrow ended up being a massive chapter that Hussein worked tirelessly on. And so it ended up taking a little longer, but it's like the chapter of the book so far. So we put a lot of work into it.
Yeah, I was just reading through it over the weekend, you know, working through the code samples, making sure everything was working and I wasn't getting any errors or anything. And this next chapter that's coming out, it's all about navigation. And I just think it's a really, really awesome chapter. It's so in depth and just really helped me. I don't have much experience with React Native, but it really helped me kind of solidify why navigation is such a big deal in React Native. And because I know I've read so many, or, you know, just seen so many articles about navigation and been to meetups where people talk about navigation. I don't think I quite got like why it's such a big deal. And reading this chapter, I really understood, okay, yes, it makes sense now. Navigation is a big deal. And it's really just I think really just a really good chapter to help people understand how navigation works on mobile, why it's different from the web, and what how you can implement it in a React Native app.
Totally. I mean, we've had like three entire episodes, I think, just on navigation. And if you listen to one, like, I mean, if you listen to them back to back, it'll sound crazy because they're all so different because things change so fast and they have, you know, progressed so much since when React Native first came out. I guess on that note, I am kind of curious what your thoughts are on navigation as far as the patterns or maybe the library that you chose to use and kind of why you chose that. I know there's two, in my opinion, like two main ones that people are kind of moving towards. That's React Navigation and React Native Navigation. And I kind of believe they're both equally good for certain circumstances, but I'm kind of curious what you all chose to go with in the book.
So,
go ahead, David.
We ended up choosing React Navigation mainly because that is like the officially recommended way of doing navigation. And also because we are teaching each lesson using Create React Native App. And so we didn't want to have to deal with ejecting and linking in native modules. So JavaScript-only navigation seems like the way to go for us. But Hussein can probably add a lot more context, having written the navigation chapter, about the pros and cons of that.
Yeah, no, I was about to say pretty much the exact same thing. I think we all sort of spent some time deciding which approach to take before I actually started writing. Once I had my outline and the first draft. And yeah, like I think we all sort of quickly realized JavaScript implementation would make sense for teaching, so we don't have to sort of dive in into linking and ejecting. But also because, just like Devin said, React Navigation is sort of the recommended option in the docs. But at the very beginning of the chapter, we do spend a little time sort of going over the difference between native navigation and JavaScript, and sort of go with the pros and cons. And the end of the chapter, we sort of say, or actually the end of the introduction, we sort of talk about how each sort of use case depends on which app you're trying to build, and there are pros and cons for each. And for the purpose of this application, we're just going with React Navigation, but there are definitely use cases where you might need to use something like React Native Navigation, or even just Airbnb's Native Navigation.
I think in most of our chapters, we sort of dive right into the code, and this is the first chapter where we actually spend a long time just giving you the lay of the land, because I know when I was starting out in React Native and trying to figure out how to do navigation, there are just so many options out there, and all the names sound surprisingly similar.
That's so true.
All sound the same.
I think there's even stuff called like React Native Native Navigation, React Native 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 Navigation, like four natives in there, and then you can combine pretty much any other buzzword. Native Flux Routing Navigator. And there's something out there like that. We spent a lot of time just saying, like, if you're new to React Native, like, here's the deal. And we'll leave it to you to make the call for your app. But we chose React Navigation.
Yeah. And to be fair, definitely want to thank Anthony and you, Devin, for that. Because even when I had my first draft, I think both of you really said, okay, definitely flush the details out first before diving into the code. And even when I started writing the second and third versions of the chapter, I realized, yeah, it is important to sort of really explain that topic properly before actually coding, because the whole landscape is just so confusing.
So on the topic of navigation, do you all want to kind of just go over why someone might choose one navigation library over the other and kind of what React Native has, what has happened in the React Native ecosystem, I guess, up until this point, to kind of get us to where we are with the different available options that are kind of the only viable ones at this point?
Yeah, I can start at the start. In the early days, we had Navigator iOS, Navigator Android, and I think just Navigator. And so there were sort of, right from the very beginning, always two options. You either went JavaScript-only navigation, or you went native UI navigation. And the essential pros and cons are, with JavaScript-based navigation, it tends to be really easy to customize because you can change pretty much anything about it, any view, any animation, any transition. You can push updates over the air if you need to with code push. And it's just overall pretty easy to work with because the APIs will feel familiar, like, you know, any other React API for the most part. And then the pros of native navigation are you'll get that exact look and feel of a native application. So, for example, if you're building a native iOS app and you add React Native into it halfway through, you can have like seamless transitions from native screen to iOS screen and so on. So we've always sort of had these two options. I think all of the initial navigation options ended up being deprecated. Navigator iOS, I always thought was actually pretty cool and was pretty easy to use and worked great, but it was only for iOS, which is a pretty big disadvantage. So that ended up sort of getting deprecated. Navigator, the JavaScript solution, ended up turning into Navigation Experimental, and then there was X Navigation, and then those got merged. And now it's React Navigation, and that is like what we've learned over the past 2 or 3 years since React Native has existed, and all of the learnings have gone to this one new library. So far as JavaScript-based React Navigation goes, I think React Navigation is the best one. On the native side, it still feels like when I try the Wix one, it still feels like they're experimenting with the API lot. I haven't used it since version 1, actually, but I know version 2 made some big updates. And so I feel like we might not know what the best native navigation solution is yet. But if you're looking for something like today, the Wix one is pretty solid, and it'll handle pretty much any use case you can throw at it on both iOS and Android.
So I have a question, Devin. As I was working through the code for the navigation chapter, you know, the transition seemed pretty fine to me. What kind of navigation transitions would require a more native feel to it that JavaScript doesn't provide?
Well, I guess for a little backstory, for a long time, the animations, to be honest, were pretty bad. And then just a couple months ago, actually, Skevy from Expo, I only know his Twitter handle, Adam, I forget, but his name is Skevy, and he like took a video of the iOS simulator at 60 FPS and slowed it down, and then in JavaScript tried to make the animation match exactly. And so until very recently, I think the animations in React Navigation were pretty subpar, and now it's almost impossible to tell the difference. I'd say the main place where it still ends up being relevant potentially is, for example, when iOS 11 came out in the iPhone 10 or iPhone X, and suddenly the navigation pattern changed a bit, and the screen size changed, and so now the text that's the title potentially needs to sort of move from the scroll view into the navigation bar, and we now have to worry about the notch at the top and all these and the bottom and all these other things. It took a little time for React Navigation to catch up, and I'm still not sure it can do all of the native transitions. So that's sort of where the difference comes in right now. I think for the core animations, they are getting pretty close, almost indistinguishable.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So earlier you all mentioned that you were using Create React Native App, which is Expo's kind of SDK to build React Native apps that abstracts away the need to install a lot of the native SDKs for like iOS and Android, so you can run your simulator on your machine a little easier if you're kind of either coming into this new and you don't want to work and do all that stuff getting set up, or maybe you just like the way that Expo kind of has a lot of built-in things that are just there and they work for you. Can you kind of talk about like what you have implemented in using the React Native CLI versus the Expo Create React Native app?
I think Hussein would actually have a little more background to give because he wrote this awesome React Native app called Gitpoint, which is an open source GitHub client. And that, I believe, uses React Native CLI.
It does, yeah. So when I started building Gitpoint, Expo sort of Create React Native app wasn't sort of announced just yet. And then about a month or so later, when I attended ReactConf, they announced it. And I was like, wow, I wish I had had this sooner. But I think for my use case for Gitpoint, it made sense. Because we soon after, me and a few contributors, we soon after needed to actually include some native modules, like React Native, Safari View. So using the CLI was just fine. However, I think a lot of people who do use the CLI, you do run into build issues now and then. In my experience, actually trying to create React Native app after that was, it's a lot smoother and it's a lot easier. So for this book, it just made so much sense to use it. For one, it's easier to get up and running. Secondly, people who don't have a Mac don't have to be concerned with actually needing to get a Mac and get Xcode in order to run iOS apps. They can just use Expo and you know, build for iOS or build for Android. And it's also nice because we can actually now give the QR code for every sample app that we build in the book to anyone who actually wants to preview it. So there was a lot of cool features that made sense. With that being said, even during my workplace right now, when we do build apps in general, I usually always use the CLI. And I feel like for production apps, you're going to most likely need to sort of eject at a certain point when you want to include native modules and so forth. But I feel like for simple applications or for a teaching tool, Create React Native app works really well.
Yeah, totally. To Hussein's point, it really just depends on the application you want to write. I think for all of our apps, we pretty much know in advance the feature set that we're going to need. So we feel pretty confident just going with a JavaScript-only solution. And of course, if you need to add native modules, you can just eject. I think if you know in advance that you're going to, for example, need to use native navigation or need to use some other native modules, then it might make more sense just to use React Native CLI. I think our final chapter in the book is going to be on ejecting and publishing to the App Store, because let's face it, a lot of apps do end up needing native modules. And so that's like just as important to learn as anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that you have a chapter called Native Modules where you're writing iOS and Android native modules. I'm actually really looking forward to that chapter because that's my weak point. And I think that's a lot of the weak point for a lot of developers that come into React Native from a JavaScript background, because of course we've never built native apps before. So this is all kind of new to us, all of the native parts, and just kind of understanding how to write native modules is such a huge thing to learn, because it seems like not only do you have to understand React Native and JavaScript and how React Native kind of works under the hood a little bit, you also kind of have to understand a couple of different programming languages in addition. So you have to, if you want to write for iOS, you have to understand Objective-C and maybe even a little Swift. And for Android, you have to understand Java. And then you also maybe need to understand a million other things that are going on. I'm kind of curious, and Devin, I know you have quite a bit, at least if I remember correctly, native experience. Is it kind of even possible for a JavaScript developer to learn how to build native modules to a point where they can kind of build complex bridging between React Native and JavaScript, kind of just coming into React Native, or is that something that takes a long time for developers to learn?
It's a tough question. I definitely don't have a ton of native experience, but I have some. I think if you're trying to bridge an existing native module, I think a JavaScript developer can do that, because mostly you'll be just looking at the example native modules that are open source or built into React Native. Like, for example, React Native Video is a great example of a bridged module, and it's not too hard to figure out the interface and all the things you need to implement on both the JavaScript side and the iOS and Android side. So I feel like that's pretty doable. I think if you're going to build a totally new component from scratch on iOS and Android and then try to bridge it, I think that's a lot harder for a JavaScript developer, just because there are so many things to learn on the native side. So in this case, you're really not like copying and pasting and tweaking existing code. You're probably writing stuff from scratch. But, you know, it's definitely doable. And especially as iOS moves towards Swift, which I think pretty much everyone is happy with Swift and using it now, and as Android moves toward Kotlin, both of those languages are much higher level. They're much more modern with clean syntax, great type safety. The languages themselves are very similar. So I think JavaScript developers will see that as time goes on, it'll be easier and easier to bridge modules.
So we talked about learning how to write native modules a little bit a few episodes ago with Mike from CallStack, and he recommended the iOS programming Big Nerd Ranch guide for iOS development. It's kind of seems to be mostly Swift at this point, from what I can tell, because I started reading it, and that's a pretty good book. Are there any resources for Android that you would recommend for people that are kind of wanting to learn more of the native side?
Does anyone have anything? I don't have anything.
I haven't really come across anything. I'm wondering if just the typical like Android books and tutorials and stuff like that might be a good place. I haven't really gotten to that point yet. Most of the time, again, when I have done any bridging, it's kind of bridging an existing module, like you had mentioned, and kind of looking at an example and seeing if I can figure a way out to get it done. Other than that, that's about as much experience as I've had. And pretty much Googling around is the most effective thing for me so far, at least.
I think, again, for bridging modules, there are a lot of great open source ones that exist already, and you can get pretty far just looking at what they do.
So we've talked about the book quite a bit, but we haven't really gone into kind of where everyone that is involved in this, like what your background is. And I think it's pretty interesting, some of the different things that you all have worked on. So I guess let's kind of go into that a little bit. Hussein, can you kind of start off and tell us how you got into programming and then maybe how you got into React Native?
Sure. So the very first time I programmed was in my first year at university. I studied mechanical engineering at University of Toronto. It was an intro to programming course. They taught C. I hated it only because of the way they taught wasn't the best way, in my opinion. Our exams were handwritten, so I left a bad taste of programming in my mouth. Didn't really do programming until I did my first internship, which had a bit of Visual Basic and SQL, and I said, okay, this actually isn't too bad. Only after I graduated, I started looking into web development on my own at home just to get a better idea of how to build a website because I needed to. And then in my first job at Deloitte Digital, I did a bit more web development. It was mostly Angular 1 and Rails work. And now I work at Wrangle.io. They're a JavaScript consultancy based in Toronto. And we focus on building web and mobile app development using purely JavaScript and associated frameworks. So most of our projects are either focused on building a React app, an Angular app, or a React Native app. And I've been here for a little over a year now.
And you do a little bit of speaking as well, right? I've seen you kind of around over the last year. Do you have any conferences coming up or maybe past ones you want to talk about?
Yeah, my next one is this coming Saturday in Austria. And I'll be talking about progressive web enhancements and the purple pattern. So most of my talks this past year have been about either progressive web applications, progressive enhancements, and that's just been a topic that I've been interested in. I've also spoken about React Native at a few local meetups and events in Toronto. I'm hoping to actually speak about React Native topics and more conferences this coming year. I do enjoy speaking, even though it does take some time preparing the slides and preparing the content, but I'm hoping to actually do a bit more. After this week, I think the next one that's actually planned for me will be FluentCon. In June or July, I believe. So I'm looking forward to that one as well.
So, Sophia, you are part of this React Native team for the book, but you also run the Full Stack React Weekly newsletter. And I'm kind of curious, what else do you do and kind of how did you get involved in React in general?
So, yes, I love writing my weekly newsletter. It's just a really fun thing for me to do personally. I just love seeing what is in the React and React Native world, what people are building, the latest news. So in some ways, the newsletter is a little bit selfish just because I just love keeping up to date with what's going on. But also, I just, you know, I love letting other people know about what's going on. And then I got involved with React, I want to say, like 3.5 years ago, I was working on a side project, and at work I was using Backbone, and I had started off this side project with Backbone, and I wasn't too crazy about it. So I did a little bit of research and found React. And initially I was a little bit turned off by it. I think quite a few people are, just the JSX is a little funky, but I gave it 5 minutes like you're supposed to, and just really fell in love with it. I had only done a tiny bit of Backbone at that point, and prior to that it was all jQuery, and a lot of it was just function files for days and just, you know, trying to maintain all of that. It was really, really hard. And so I just loved React's approach to building things on the client, and that side project didn't go anywhere. But ever since then, I've just been really, just gotten more and more involved with the community and written more apps with React. And yeah, I just really love it. It's great.
That's awesome. I love getting the newsletter. It's like my favorite newsletters are my React Native newsletters. And that's, yours has, React and React Native. And then I like getting my, the one from Infinite Red, I forgot the name. And I also bug you like every week or two whenever I write something to see if you'll add it.
Yeah, I try to add them as often as I can, because you always write good stuff. So
thank you. Anthony, we haven't heard a lot from you. I'm kind of curious. So what exactly are you doing as far as like your day-to-day job, and how did you get into programming?
I went to school for electrical engineering, but kind of caught the software bug in an internship, and then went into software full-time after that, and haven't really looked back. It's been a ton of fun. These days, I mostly keep busy doing enterprise software consulting. So keep it pretty boring.
So, do you work for yourself, or do you work for another company? Or
I work for myself. I have one primary client right now that I actually thoroughly enjoy working with. So it's been a really great engagement.
Very cool. I just got out of consulting. I really enjoyed it, but there is definitely a lot to say if you have one good client, because I did have a couple over the years, and it was a lot easier to sleep at night when you have a really easy client to work with, or a nice client to work with.
100%.
So Devin, I know we've had you actually on the show before, and you've been active in the React Native community since as far as I can remember, really. I know that with React, when React Native Express came out, it was like the best thing for learning React Native. And even to this day, it's the first place I actually send people, because it still is to me the best place to kind of get something going with React Native right away. That and Snack, I think, also are really, those two places are awesome. Can you kind of give us kind of another quick overview of kind of how you got into React Native and kind of what you're working on right now? I know Airbnb does a lot of stuff with React Native open source. I'm kind of curious as to what you're doing right now.
For sure. Well, I got into React Native because I wanted to try to bridge this gap between design tools and engineering, where you have to, you know, design something in Sketch or any of the Adobe products, and then you sort of recreate it in iOS and in Android and on the web. And React Native, in a lot of ways, solves the cross-platform problem, because it can run on iOS, it can run on Android, and with things like React Native Web and React Primitives, it can run on the web. So that's what really interested me about it. And I thought I could use React Native to build sort of a graphical tool, whether you think of it as like a Flexbox GUI builder or like interface builder, but for every platform. And so I started a company called Deco, and we made an IDE. The IDE, I think we had a lot of good ideas about how you could search for packages that have been published specifically to be sort of, you just drop it in and it works. In practice, the IDE didn't work very well. And so we ended up Airbnb thought what we were doing was pretty interesting, and they wanted us to do similar things internally. So we all joined Airbnb through an acquisition. And now I'm working on something that I think is the successor of Deco, which is called Lona. It's open source. You can check it out at GitHub/Airbnb/Lona, L-O-N-A. And the basic premise is the same. I want to be able to take a single design and run it on any platform. And I want a designer to be able to make changes to the original component. And those changes just sort of work everywhere. So if you need to change like the padding or the color or text styles or whatever, I don't think we should have to do any engineering work to make that happen. Now, I think I am a little less focused on React Native at the moment and more focused on just, I guess, making sure this thing works on every platform. So even native iOS and Android. And that's because Airbnb uses all four platforms. We use native iOS, native Android, React Native, and React on the web. And so just supporting React Native for something like this wouldn't really be good enough for Airbnb. So that's a bit long, but I think it's a really cool project. I can take a single, essentially React component and generate native Swift components from it. So you get this highly performant Swift UI code from a React Native component.
Wow, that's awesome.
Pretty compelling.
That's amazing, and it's ambitious. And I'm looking here at the GitHub repo, and it's super ambitious. It looks awesome. I know when I first heard about it, I checked it out, but I haven't been back in a while.
I try to say in the README pretty strongly that you shouldn't try to use it for anything production that needs to be in production. But it is coming along pretty rapidly. I've got a few awesome open source contributors, and I'll be giving a talk at React Europe on it in May. So that's probably when I'll try to maybe get some people to start using it.
Very cool. Very cool. So before we wrap it up, I guess I'm kind of curious to hear the take on the future of React Native. I know that recently, like maybe within the last week or two, they added or they changed the license to be MIT, which was kind of like a big sticking point, I guess, for certain companies and for people that were kind of very vocal, I guess, on the internet, trying to say that their company or certain people were not going to use it because the license, and supposedly this was going to kind of like handle that. And I've also seen some talk about there being some really interesting things that are going to be released or people that are working on interesting things within Facebook for React Native that we're going to hear about over the next couple of months. So it seems like the project still has a lot of momentum. I know a lot of companies are still picking it up. Big companies are starting to use it in production. I'm kind of curious what everyone's take is on kind of the health of the project and any areas where you see kind of other frameworks that are kind of coming up that might be potential competitors that people that are interested in writing mobile applications in JavaScript, they might be interested in looking at those other projects as well. And I guess this is really for anyone.
Yeah. From my experiences, I think when I started using React Native for the first time about a year ago, quite a few people that I talked to seemed hesitant with the idea of trying to build things in React Native as opposed to native, purely native code. But now, the more people that I talk to, it seems to be picking up a lot more traction. I think things like Expo and Create React Native App making things a lot easier for people to onboard. So I personally think in the next year or so, even further, it's only going to grow and grow. And I'm excited to see how the platform changes and makes things easier for everybody.
I think there are a lot of really positive things about React Native right now. I think the relative API stability makes a huge difference, especially when I was getting started with like React 0.12 or 0.18 or whatever it was. The core APIs would change all the time. And that just doesn't happen anymore. For example, we updated all five example projects in our book automatically with like a 50-line script I wrote. And I don't think a single API broke. So that's huge. I think it's React Native still has a ways to go in a couple spots. One thing is, you know, getting more of a native feel for a lot of things like animations, gestures, interactions that are more complex. I think the relatively new React Native gesture handler or just a responder library is going to be huge. So that's awesome. And then I think also getting interoperability between React Native and Native on more of a component basis than a screen basis could be huge, because I guess, for example, at Airbnb, there are a lot of strengths and weaknesses to both React Native and Native, but we just have such a big native app and so many things sort of already exist, or components for things already exist, and it can often just not make sense to have to create a whole new screen or flow of screens in React Native when we have so much native infrastructure.
Yeah, even where I work, and Wrangle is a consultancy, and a lot of the clients that we get, many of them usually have a problem saying, hey, we have this huge native code base. Is React Native even a possibility? So I feel like you're right. That's one of the big hesitations that a lot of people have now, and a lot of big companies have, like Airbnb.
I don't see React Native going anywhere, that's for sure. Yeah. I certainly haven't seen anything new come out lately that seems like it would sort of occupy that same space. Like Flutter, for example, was kind of interesting when it came out, but it doesn't seem to have gained the same kind of adoption. And there's some other options, NativeScript and Telerik and all those, but they haven't caught on nearly as much. So I feel like if what you want is a cross-platform app that you write once, React Native is really the way to do it. It's not for every app. And so if you have the manpower or people power to just build it twice for both platforms, maybe you should do that. But there are a lot of downsides that come with that too, and React Native solves it pretty well.
That was very well put, I think. I agree. I'm very interested to kind of see, speaking of Flutter, I'm kind of interested to see where that goes. You're right, though. It doesn't seem to have gained the adoption. I really liked it. And I think that one of the concerns that I had was, well, the thing is with React, it's just so awesome to be able to learn one paradigm and be able to build for all these platforms. You don't really get that with a lot of other things. I think Vue maybe is getting there now that you can build with native script. But with React, you're also able to do like virtual reality and augmented reality and Apple TV and probably a dozen other ones that I can't really think of right now. And I think that's one of the big advantages. Also, once you learn React, it's actually pretty really fun and really nice to use. Depending on kind of what you've done in the past, you may have more or less appreciation for that. But coming from Angular 1 and coming from jQuery, it's just awesome. But I'm also been, you know, when someone specializes in something, they seem to have a bias towards that. So I'm pretty sure I'm slightly biased at this point.
Yeah, last week I went to a React meetup, and one of the speakers talked about how he created a port of React Native to work on Apple TV, which I think is so awesome that just React in general, or the whole idea concept around React, it's portable, right? You can make an Apple TV app using the React Native code base, which I think is really...
It's crazy. Cool. It's like unheard of.
Yeah. And then, you know, I guess last year Facebook came out with, you know, the whole virtual reality platform. I don't know if that has really taken off, but I think the idea of being able to use similar concepts and maybe sometimes using similar code is just like really appealing. And I hope that, I mean, it seems to me that React Native is going to stick around. I mean, you know, Facebook uses it themselves, so at least it'll stick around for them. I think that it's just a great concept or great structure for people that so they don't have to learn different languages just to build on different platforms.
I sort of feel like React and the pattern behind it of like UI as a function of state is like a local maximum in front-end or UI development, and that the thing that replaces it might not be another framework. It might be something totally different.
Yeah, like, I agree. Yeah.
Maybe we'll finally solve having a graphical UI builder that's just fundamentally better than writing code or something.
But
it seems hard to imagine anything really replacing React, or at least that paradigm. Like, I consider Vue essentially the same kind of idea, just, you know, with different trade-offs here and there.
and even Angular too, to some extent, right? So I feel like even Angular went that direction, and you're right, things are just going in that direction for a good reason too.
Well, I think we're about there on time. Is there anything that you all want to cover that we haven't touched on before we get to the picks? Okay, I think I'll start with Sophia. Do you have any picks for today?
Yeah, so I think that it is related to what we're talking about. But so the person who spoke at the meetup that I went to, his Twitter handle is at Doug Loader, LOWDER. And he has a couple of links. One of his pinned tweet is all about building a React Native app on Apple TV. And the link that he has just has all this detail about how you would build a React Native application. And the one that he demoed at the meetup was really, it was pretty simple, but I just thought it was so cool to, you know, build a React Native app for Apple TV. I just think it's awesome. So check out his Twitter account, and you'll find some links about how to build a React Native app for Apple TV.
Hussein, do you have any picks?
I think the one thing on the topic of the different options of building native applications using JavaScript, I think the one thing that I've been meaning to actually take a look into is Weex. I think I'm pronouncing it right, which is supposed to be the Vue alternative to building native applications. Seems interesting, seems fascinating. So that's one thing that I've thought to look into. Some other picks. Now, outside of technical things, I don't know if everyone here has watched Black Panther, but if you haven't, definitely watch it. Probably the best movie I've seen in a long time. And yeah, it's the only thing I think I have on my mind.
The Black Panther soundtrack is amazing. I haven't seen the movie yet.
Oh, you love the movie as well. That's for sure.
So my pick is similar to what you were talking about with Weex. So there are now two ways to write native or React Native type applications with Vue. Weex came out, and that was like from Alibaba or something like that. And then NativeScript announced something like a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I'll go into that in just a second when it comes back to me. But I guess we'll go over next to Devin. Do you have any picks, Devin?
Yeah. If you haven't tried ReasonML yet, I suspect a lot of people have, but it is amazing and you should try it right now.
Okay, awesome. So do you think Reason is to a stage where it's kind of usable for production applications? I know that there's another compile step that's there that has to do with like BuckleScript. Is that kind of to a point where you can pretty much build one-to-one with regular JavaScript?
Well, I'm definitely not the authority on this. I think there are still a lot of challenges and it's super rough. But even with those things, it's so good that you should like start playing with it now. I think I guess I didn't realize that if I use the OCaml standard library when I'm writing Reason code, then that will have to be bundled in with the JavaScript. And that can end up being pretty big. It's sort of like the Lodash problem where if you include all of Lodash, you get like an extra megabyte in your bundle, and that's probably not ideal, but it doesn't seem like there's a great way to include just like a single standard library function, or at least that was my impression. So just if you can, stick to only the JavaScript standard library, and you should be okay for now. I think in general, because everything is compiled like one-to-one, and it's encouraged that you keep your compiled files in your like in your Git repository, I feel comfortable shipping production stuff simply because, you know, like any given version of Reason right now, I don't see a reason why I'd really need to update it. It's not like there are going to be like new features or anything that I like desperately need. So I think it's stable for production, but sort of subjective.
Very cool. Anthony, do you have any picks?
I should have predicted that Devin would snipe me on that one. I'll piggyback that by saying, even if you don't want to go in and type Reason code, if you work with JavaScript or Redux or even having fun with TypeScript or Flow, it can be really entertaining and rewarding to read through the docs for Reason and just sort of see what it's bringing to the table as far as its type system and what have you. I'd say for non-technical picks, I started Shoe Dog, the Phil Knight story, this weekend, and I can't put it down. So that'll be taking over the rest of my week.
All right. That book is on my to-read list, so I'm going to have to bump that to the top now.
Bump it to the top.
I have two picks. One of them is the Vue integration for native script. So if you're listening to the show, you're probably interested in writing mobile applications in JavaScript. So if you kind of have played around with Vue or you're interested in Vue, I'm not sure how stable this is. It seems to be on like a 1.0. So that whatever, you know, that means I haven't really gotten to the point where I've done anything with it other than just play around with it. But it seems pretty cool. Vue seems pretty fun. I still like React better, but I'm also a React developer. If you're coming from like Angular, you might like Vue better. So yeah, basically you can go to nativescript-vue.org to learn how to do that. My second pick is workshop.me. It is a website or kind of a company that was put together by Ryan Florence. He used to be with React Training. Now he's opened this company where he has basically people from the within the community, specialists come and do trainings on site where you can just basically buy tickets. So he has people like Kent C. Dodds himself, Sean Larkin. You can even learn Vue from Evan Yu. So there's a bunch of others that I'm kind of leaving out. I'm going to be doing a React Native workshop with workshop.me at the end of May in San Francisco. So if you're interested in learning about an array of different topics, really check out the website and kind of find a workshop that's close to you if you're interested and check it out. It's going to be a pretty interesting project because from what I understand, he has a bunch of more people kind of coming on board sometime soon. Well, that kind of wraps up this episode. If you're listening and you're not already a subscriber to the newsletter, check out newsletter.fullstackreact.com. Check out the book if you're kind of trying to learn React Native, fullstackreact.com/react-native. Everyone that's here, thank you for coming on the show. I know this is everyone's time is precious. All four of you kind of showed up. This is amazing. Thank you so much again for taking time out of your schedule to join us.
Thanks. It was really fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. This wraps up episode 89 of React Native Radio. We'll see everyone next week.